versus Miller. Mr. Goodridge.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Counsel. We're here today on United States of America versus Charles Miller. Mr. Miller's case involved six counts. Three counts were violation of 18 United States Code 2113A, bank robbery, and then three counts of brandishing a firearm during the course of a bank robbery, which were violations of 18 United States Code Section 924C. Mr. Miller went to trial on each of the counts. He was convicted of each of the counts. The trial lasted about a week. He was ultimately sentenced to 747 months. The issue on the appeal, and really the issue, the pertinent issue in the entire case, was my client's seizure by Chief Hensley of the Oakland City Police Department shortly after the last bank robbery.
So are you trying to say that the officer didn't have the right to cause him to pull the car over?
No, ma'am.
So that much is okay. And so I assume the officer can also walk up to the car, right?
He chose not to.
He chose not to because he knew that there was a gun involved with the thing. But if he could have walked up to the car, what I'm having trouble with is the photographs and the records seem to indicate that this gun and other things very suggestive of a recent bank robbery are in plain view in the car.
The number one, I don't contest the initial stop. I think the Terry stop was warranted, and that's why I did not challenge that in the argument. Number two, I think the officer did have a right to approach the car. He chose not to.
At what point, then, if the initial stop is okay, when does it not become okay in your view?
Well, it was hotly contested at trial and in the suppression hearing. You know, when those pictures were taken, the car had already partially been searched. I believe it was brought out in the suppression hearing that he did rummage through some of the vehicle. If you look at his testimony as compared to the photos, there's a difference in what he testified to. He testified that he could see handles of the sacks come out from underneath a stack of clothing and a hat on it. You know, that's what he testified to. You look at the photos, the sacks are wide open. There's United States currency readily available. There's a firearm on the floor. There was a search. So my analysis starts at the fact that he did not choose to walk up to the vehicle. I have to take the officer's choices for what they are. First of all, he ordered my client. He did a felony stop.
And I guess maybe I'll jump to a different point. Given the information that had been radioed to him about the identifying features of the bank robber, the time, the kind of car, the general physical appearance of Mr. Miller, why wasn't this a stop supported by probable cause?
I don't think it was supported by probable cause because he didn't know that he was.
No, why not? What else could be said?
That's my argument. My argument is that he said he was doing an investigatory stop. That's what the officer testified to. He did a felony stop because he was investigating a potential bank robber. He never said that he had probable cause or he felt that he had probable cause at the time.
But that's objective. It doesn't matter if he says it or not. If it's objectively present, then it's present.
A vehicle in the same area, that's all he knew at the same time.
What do you think he should have done?
What I think he should have done? After he called my client out of the vehicle, back to his vehicle, had my client submit, get on his knees, hands behind his head, handcuffed him. He was secure. If the officer at that time...
Then what?
If the officer then is investigating a person who is in his...
Don't if it.
Okay,
he's got the fellow secured. He's safe. Now what should the officer do?
Since the officer was asking him if there was a firearm in the car...
Look, I don't want to give me the sense. What should he do after he's secured the fellow, he's put him in the back of his police car, what happened? Okay, now what's the next step for law enforcement?
He should have Mirandized my client.
What difference would that make?
Well, he uses the firearm as a reason to approach the vehicle.
All right, suppose he gives him Miranda warning. The fellow says, I'm not going to say anything to you. All right, now what? What's the next step for law enforcement? Let him go or what?
No, I think the officer...
What's the next step?
The officer can approach the vehicle and do a non-intrusive, plain view search of the vehicle with his eyes.
And if he doesn't see anything?
Well, the question is, if
what... Answer my question. If he doesn't see anything, then what?
If he wants to search the vehicle, he has to apply for a warrant.
Look, I'm asking you a question.
Yes.
After he walks up and doesn't see anything, then what does he do?
He can try to detain my client.
What do you mean, try to detain your client? What does that mean? Well, he's under arrest. Otherwise, he wouldn't have to give Miranda warning. So now what does he do? He's arrested him. He's looked in the car. He didn't see anything. Now what does he do?
Should release my client.
And he drives off in the car with a gun and the money. Okay.
Yeah, but that isn't the fact.
That's not the fact. He did see something in the vehicle. That was hotly contested at trial as well.
Not by him. You know, he saw it. I mean, this is... He's already... I thought your objection was that he had to stop because he wasn't at risk. It shouldn't have done any more looking around, I guess.
Under the Carroll Doctrine, number one, I don't think there was probable cause based upon what he reports that he saw inside the vehicle. Number two, the vehicle wasn't in any danger of moving anywhere. My client was already in custody. I think a warrant was required.
You're saying he should have been released so he could drive off. That's what you just said.
That was on the condition that the officer saw nothing.
Yes, that's what I was saying.
In this case, the officer saw something.
Wait a second. First he says hotly, what did he see? What is this something you concede he saw?
He saw a stack of a pile of clothing. He saw two plastic handles from plastic bags coming up through the clothing. He saw a hat.
So these were suspicious circumstances. So then what, I thought you said he should let the fellow drive away. Now you're saying no, suspicious circumstances. So what does he do, get a warrant to search the car?
Correct.
All right, he searches the car, finds the gun, the money, and we're just where we are now, right?
That's if a judge would have granted the warrant.
Make any difference.
Well, you see, that's the problem. I mean, first of all, I don't know why it helps you that these things were contested, because the judge chose to believe the officers, and we give deference to those kinds of basic factual findings about what was in the car and what was seen. Secondly, the government has argued, among other things, I think where Judge Posner's going, inevitable discovery. By the time he sees enough to justify getting a warrant, it's just a matter of time. You know, the money and the gun would have been found.
My argument is, I don't know if they would, if a neutral attached magistrate, based upon what he saw, would have found.
Well, based on the factual findings of the district court, I think any magistrate would have given a warrant. But that.
And my argument is that some of those findings are tainted by the custodial interrogation without Miranda.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Mr. Goodridge.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Schellenbarger? Sorry.
May it please the Court, my name is Todd Schellenbarger. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Indiana. I represent the United States in this appeal. On April 17, 2009, Chief Alex Hensley of the Oakland City Police Department cut Charles Miller off on the only escape route west of the bank Miller had robbed minutes before in rural southern Indiana. The Chief's work from this point forward, his observations of Miller led to the eventual solution to three bank robberies in the Southern District of Indiana, linked by the aggressive use of
the argument about the safety exception to Miranda. Once he has Miller outside of the car and in handcuffs, what's the danger?
The questioning, actually, the timing of the questioning occurred even before he was fully in handcuffs.
Fully handcuffed? What does that mean?
Well, he literally walked up to the individual when he was on his knees, and as he is placing one handcuff on one hand, he's already asking, do you have a weapon in the car? Where is it? So it was an instant question as the evidence was presented at the
Well, if he's handcuffing him, why does he care about what's in the car?
Well,
from a safety standpoint.
At that moment, he had not even done a protective sweep around the vehicle, and at that moment, he would not know, for example, if Mr. Miller was acting alone.
He better hurry up and put the handcuffs on and not be talking to the guy. I mean, it doesn't make sense, right? If you really think that someone might reach into the car and get a gun, then you handcuff him. You don't start talking to him, right? You finish handcuffing him.
Well, that's simply how I did it. Almost simultaneously.
I think you're just saying he multitasked, right? He's talking and handcuffing at the same time.
But he had not had an opportunity to look into the vehicle at the moment he asked that question.
So it's just really so all about whether somebody else was hiding on the floor of the back seat.
Yeah, that is a possibility
something.
He had not ruled out. It was in a public location close to an open convenience store in a busy intersection, so the public was also
Well, they
present.
Knew that he wasn't, that no one from the convenience store jumped in because it was the officer who decided exactly where he wanted to pull the car over. He was waiting for his backup, as I recall. He could have pulled him over sooner.
Yes, or perhaps later, I suppose.
But
he
wound up pulling him over.
He couldn't control where Miller would stop once the lights were activated, and Miller ended up pulling over adjacent to a convenience store. This court has ruled that the public safety exception permits the type of questioning that occurred in this case. In the R case, spelled A-R-E, an opinion issued in 2009, the court cited several reasons that it considered.
Hey, Miranda has really become a Swiss cheese, hasn't it? It's got so many exceptions.
Well, this exception is well founded given
the. It's not really applicable here, I don't think.
I respectfully disagree with Your Honor in that it falls. If we look at the R case, which permitted the questioning pre-Miranda of that defendant before.
He's in the car, he's being handcuffed.
In our case, the individual was in custody. The officer had no specific reason to know he was armed.
Well, what
it was not
would
in a
it
public
make to
place.
You if it was a Miranda problem? Does that mean you lose?
I would say no, Your Honor, given that all this
say.
Evidence would eventually have been discovered.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to point out that we're talking about two firearms here as well. And the most incriminating firearm, the ported barrel firearm, was found in the center console of the vehicle, not on the floor next to the driver's seat, which was the firearm that Miller was answered the questions about.
I thought that your basic point was that enough was in plain view, even just looking through the windows of the car, that a further search of the vehicle was supported by probable cause.
Absolutely. And in your
That's
questions
a more
earlier,
straightforward argument.
In your questions earlier, you asked what the chief saw, and the key thing that was not mentioned that he saw was a black bandana mask in the front seat, and he had a report from the tellers that the robber wore a black bandana mask, that he was armed, that he was a tall individual, matching the description of Mr. Miller.
Before Miranda, what did he know? What did he ask? What did the defendant say?
What was his response to the questions?
Yeah,
he said, do you have a weapon? Where is it?
He said, do you have a gun?
He said, do you have a weapon? Where is it? He said, yes, on the floor.
This is the process while he's handcuffing, I said.
Right.
At least the way we hear it.
Yes.
Okay. And then when did he give him Miranda warning?
He then literally walked around the car, passing by the driver's side first, looking in, seeing the firearm on the floor of the front seat, going around the other side, seeing the bandana, goes back to the back of the vehicle where Miller is standing, Mirandizes him, asks him two more questions.
There's no more conversation once he does the walk around.
There is some further questioning post-Miranda. He Mirandized him immediately.
Post-Miranda.
Yeah, immediately after getting back to where he started, he read the Miranda warning, asked him if he had a lot of money in that car, and he said he did.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, I'll...
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Schellenbarger.
Thanks.
Mr. Goodrich, is there anything further?
Just one thing.
With the microphone.
Okay, why don't you go to them?
It wasn't a black bandana mask. It was a blue bandana. The record clearly indicates that at the suppression hearing and at trial. In addition to that...
Dark blue, I presume.
Huh?
Dark blue?
It wasn't royal blue. It was a darkish blue. That's correct. Yeah. Number two, my client states he didn't say he had a lot of money in the car.
What? I can't
My client didn't state he said he had a lot of money in the car. As a matter of fact, I think the evidence was that when he was asked whether he had just robbed a bank at Arthur Junction, my client said no. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And Mr. Goodridge, you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the